Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of AI Unchained. I'm Jack, your go-to guy for all things tech, and sitting beside me, as always, is the ever-insightful Core.
Hey, hey, what's up, folks? Today, we've got a buffet of juicy topics to dive into, from the latest breakthroughs in AI, the wild ride of Web 3.0, to some eyebrow-raising developments in the tech world. So buckle up.
That's right, Core. And just to give you a sneak peek, we'll be dissecting OpenAI's recent groundbreaking announcement, unraveling the tangled web of crypto regulations, and of course, dropping a few hot takes on some rather provocative political moves.
Oh man, I can't wait to get into that. You might even see us in a friendly debate or two, and you know how fiery those can get. Plus, we'll sprinkle in some humor to keep things lively. Jack, you ready to rumble?
Always. But before we get into the thick of it, huge shout out to our listeners. Whether you're a tech enthusiast, an AI geek, or just someone who loves catching up on the latest buzz, we appreciate you tuning in.
Absolutely. And don't forget, if you're enjoying the show, smash that subscribe button and leave us a review. Your support helps us keep the content flowing.
All right, without further ado, let's jump into our first topic. OpenAI's new development is creating quite the stir. Some are calling it a game changer. Others are raising ethical concerns. Core, what's your take?
Oh, don't get me started. This isn't just another tech milestone. It's got the potential to flip the whole industry on its head. But of course, with great power comes great responsibility and controversy. Let's unpack that.
And that's just the start. We've also got some spicy updates on Web 3.0 that could redefine how we interact online. Will it live up to the hype, or is it another bubble waiting to burst?
And let's not forget the political landscape. Tech regulations are tightening, and some pretty interesting policies are coming down the pipeline. We'll be arguing if these changes are for the better or just putting us on a slippery slope.
It's going to be an epic ride, folks. So sit back, relax, and let's dive deep into today's digital frontier right here on AI Unchained.
Let's go.
So, Core, what do you make of Hong Kong's latest move to cut taxes on crypto investment gains? It looks like they're positioning themselves as a prime destination for wealth management, especially in the crypto and blockchain space.
Jack, I think this is a big play. Hong Kong is looking to really cement itself as a hub for crypto and blockchain innovation. By cutting these taxes, they're not just appealing to the typical investors, but also to the big institutional players who are showing more and more interest in crypto lately. And let's be honest, who doesn't like a good tax break?
Absolutely. And it's not just about the tax exemptions on crypto. They're also expanding these exemptions to things like overseas properties, carbon credits, private credit. Basically, they're rolling out the red carpet for the big fish. It's almost like they're saying, come here, park your money, and innovate while you're at it.
Exactly. And this move could really set Hong Kong apart, especially with places like the U.S. still trying to figure out their regulatory stance on crypto. It's a bit of a contrast. Over there, you see a mix of approval and crackdowns. Here, Hong Kong is like, bring it on. Plus, with the Secretary for Financial Services, Christopher Hui, voicing strong support for blockchain, it shows they're serious about this.
You mentioned the Secretary for Financial Services. Hui's comments about creating a conducive environment for blockchain are crucial. It's not just lip service. These exemptions and the regulatory clarity they're offering show they mean business. And, you know, with the surge in institutional interest, especially after those spot Bitcoin ETFs got approved in the U.S., the timing couldn't be better.
Very true. It's a smart move, aligning with the global trends. But let's talk about the stablecoin regulations they've got in the pipeline. By the end of 2024, they're going to require stablecoin issuers to have a physical presence in Hong Kong and keep their reserves in local banks.
Yeah, and there's also the restriction on offering interest payments to ensure stability and reduce risks. This part seems aimed at avoiding another situation like Tether's controversies over the years. Basically, they're trying to make the environment safe without stifling innovation.
That and ensuring they have some control and oversight. If the issuers are there locally, it's easier to keep tabs on things, but, you know, I think it reflects an understanding of the ecosystem's nuances. They're trying to balance between security and innovation, a tricky tightrope to walk.
Absolutely. And let's not forget ETH hitting a 5-month high. Clearly, confidence in crypto is on the rise, partly fueled by these regulatory green lights from different parts of the world. It's a chain reaction. Hong Kong cuts crypto taxes. Institutional confidence grows and the market reacts positively.
It's like they're hitting all the right notes. And speaking of markets reacting, did you see the news about XT being hacked? All funds withdrawn for ETH. It's a stark reminder that while the regulatory frameworks are tightening, the security landscape still has its pitfalls.
Yes, that's a sobering reality. On one hand, you've got these fantastic moves to foster innovation, and on the other, you've got incidents that shake investor confidence. It's like two steps forward, one step back.
Right, but I guess it just emphasizes the importance of strong security alongside progressive regulation. Still, I'm seeing more positives than negatives with Hong Kong's approach. They're encouraging growth while setting up necessary safeguards. It's promising.
Totally agree. And let's not overlook the fact that this drive isn't just about crypto. We're talking about an all-rounded appeal to sophisticated investors. The inclusion of things like carbon credits and overseas properties adds layers to their strategy.
Indeed. They're diversifying, making sure they're not putting all their eggs in one basket. It's a comprehensive strategy, and honestly, it could very well work. Provided they shore up those security aspects, they could become the go-to place for wealth management pretty fast.
And it's not only about attractive tax policies. With the explosion of blockchain innovations, places that show a forward-thinking regulatory approach will likely reap the most benefits. Hong Kong could be a blueprint for how to attract and nurture this new wave of financial technology.
And they're banking on it, pun intended. But seriously, it's an exciting time for anyone in this space. Watching Hong Kong's moves could be a real-life case study in how to evolve into a modern financial hub.
Absolutely, Cor. It'll be interesting to see how other regions respond and whether they'll follow suit or take different paths. Anyway, let's keep an eye on Hong Kong and revisit this topic once we have more data. So, Cor, we were talking about the evolution of cockpit design and how shape coding has revolutionized safety and user experience. It's fascinating to me that something as simple as differentiating switches by touch can have such a huge impact. It's almost like designing for our primal senses. You know?
Absolutely, Jack. It's like how our brains are hardwired. When you're in a high-pressure situation, like flying an airplane, you really don't have time to fiddle around. You need to know instantly what you're doing. Differentiating switches by touch is a lifesaver, literally. It's like muscle memory. Reach, feel, and act without needing to look.
I think it's a brilliant example of human-centered design. It's something we can all relate to. Imagine trying to find a light switch in a pitch-black room. When switches are all the same, it's frustrating. But if they're shaped differently, you know exactly what you're touching.
And it's not just in aviation. This principle has found its way into our gadgets and home appliances. Look at your TV remote. Buttons for volume, power, and channels are all distinctively shaped. Same goes for cars. The tactile feedback from different controls on your dashboard helps you keep your eyes on the road.
Yeah, Dyson took this idea to the next level with their car. They consolidated all the controls onto one interface. Everything moves together logically and intuitively. It's a seamless experience.
Speaking of Dyson, have you noticed their vacuum cleaners? They've used similar principles. The trigger, the power button, they're all placed and shaped to be intuitive. Even the attachments click in with a distinctive feel. You don't need to look twice. You just know.
True. What's fascinating is that the opposite approach can work just as well, like in the Audi TT with its distributed interfaces. Moving each control to its logical, contextual location can actually enhance the user experience. It's all about where it makes sense from a user's perspective.
Definitely. Different environments require different solutions. Audi's design focuses on making the user feel in control and aware of their surroundings. It's about immersing the driver in the experience, reducing the need to switch focus.
It's amazing how these principles of design go beyond just mechanics and touch on psychology. Our brains are wired to respond to clear, distinct signals. Whether it's shape coding or spatial organization, the goal is the same: make the user feel confident and in control.
And that confidence can save lives, especially in critical situations like aviation or medical emergencies. It's the reason why even in high-tech areas like AI, clarity and user experience are paramount. The simpler and clearer the interface, the more effective it is.
Speaking of AI and user interfaces, I'm reminded of the developments in AI compliance tools. Can you imagine how chaotic it would be if compliance checks in code were as confusing as unmarked cockpit switches? Automated compliance checks are like the shape-coded switches of the tech world, making sure nothing gets missed.
Exactly, Jack. It's another layer of security and efficiency. Just like how a pilot can instinctively reach the correct switch without looking, developers can rely on automated systems to ensure compliance. It's about making processes foolproof and efficient.
And that's where the future of technology is heading. Whether we're talking about physical interfaces or digital compliance, the principles remain the same: clarity, efficiency, and user-centric design. It's all interconnected.
It really is. And in the end, those small design choices can have a tremendous impact on safety, efficiency, and overall user satisfaction. It's a reminder that even in our high-tech world, sometimes the simplest solutions are the most effective.
Absolutely. Designing with the user in mind, always. So, Core, moving on from our last discussion on CDO and cross-compiling in Go, there's this nifty function called message box that just got a revamp. It creates a message window that pops up with specified options like buttons and icons and waits for user interaction. It's become quite handy, especially when you want that direct user feedback quickly without much hassle.
Oh, absolutely, Jack. The message box function is definitely a game changer for user interaction within applications. I mean, it's like having a little pop-up that says, hey, I need your attention right now, with clear responses like, okay, cancel, and even custom messages. It streamlines the user's decision-making process without them digging through menus or second-guessing what to click next.
Right. And you know, it gets even more interesting with the options for specifying icons, buttons, and even default button selections. It's like handing the user a user manual without all the cumbersome reading. Just imagine, you place a call for a warning with a yes or no button when they attempt to delete a file. Clear, concise, and all there in a flash.
Totally. But hey, here's where things get technical and a bit messy. If you start diving into creating custom styles for these messages using other Go functions like style element create and style element names, it can feel like crossing into arcane wizardry territory.
Oh, for sure. The style element create function basically lets you create new UI elements and customize your application style. But it's no walk in the park. It demands a fair bit of understanding about the elements you're modifying. Creating new elements in the current theme of an application? It's like giving your app a whole new wardrobe, but you better know your fashion sense well.
And let's not get started on the hierarchical dependencies and state-specific styling. Trying to apply different images based on the state, like disabled, selected, or any combination thereof, can make someone's head spin. But on the plus side, if you've got the patience to fiddle with style element, create, your app can look significantly better. Truly standing out with customized everything.
No kidding. And it's not just about the looks. Let's talk performance. Say you want to scale your interface elements based on the user's monitor DPI with the TK scaling function. This function adjusts how elements are displayed, ensuring they look sharp and properly scaled on any screen.
Exactly. With TK scaling, you're essentially telling your app, hey, know your surroundings and adjust accordingly. The scaling factor translates physical measurements to pixels. So whether you're working on a high DPI monitor or a standard one, your application will adapt for peak visual clarity.
You know, though, using these advanced features reminds me of moving to a new office with adjustable furniture. Sure, it takes some effort to figure out the optimal setup, but once you get it right, the functionality and comfort are unmatched.
Hilariously relatable, Jack. And speaking of functionality, let's not forget about tooltip, on simple but often understated in its importance. A tooltip can make the world of difference for user comprehension, adding explanatory notes that appear on hover.
Oh, the beauty of tooltip on. I've seen situations where users have no clue what an icon does, and just adding a tooltip makes that functionality crystal clear. It's like adding subtle signposts in a labyrinth, guiding users without them even realizing they needed guidance.
And then there's the WM protocol function, which adds another layer of interaction by handling window manager protocols. It's awesome for adding custom handlers for actions like closing a window or responding to a system restart. Couldn't agree more, Jack. With all these tools in Go, from user interaction with MessageBox to styling with Style Element Create and scale adjustments with TK Scaling, developers have a lot of power at their disposal. It's just about knowing when and how to wield it.
And wield it well, we must. All right. So wrapping up this bit, folks, the key takeaway here is efficiency in presenting a seamless user experience. Leverage these functions right, and you can truly enhance how users interact with your software. Anything else we should add before moving to the next topic, Core?
Nope. I think we've hit the mark here. Although I'd say to everyone listening, don't get intimidated by the technical nitty-gritty. Dive in, play around, and you might just create something awe-inspiring.
The evolution of drag racing, Core, is a fascinating parallel to how tech and business landscapes change over time. Just like dragsters evolving from wild, experimental machines to standardized corporate speeders, our own digital interfaces have transformed. Gone are the Wild West days of cryptic command lines and analog dials. Now we're swimming in a sea of sleek digital screens, but some designs are still a chaotic mess.
Absolutely, Jack. And that chaos in interface design is so applicable when we dive into how fintech companies manage their money. It's a bit like building a high-speed dragster. You need precision and a well-oiled machine. The focus isn't just on speed, but on ensuring every component works seamlessly together. Adopting double-entry accounting systems in fintech is like upgrading from a wacky three-wheeled dragster to an ultra-modern speedster.
Right. And speaking of precision, it's all about tracking every cent accurately. Just like needing to monitor every microsecond in a drag race, you can't afford errors on a track where engines and clutches must be rebuilt after every single race.
Exactly. And you mentioned the complexity of digital ad inventories. Think of these ad tech stacks as the supporting crew in drag racing. All these sophisticated platforms running automated auctions, each one needs to perform just right to keep the car on the track and winning. Just like a single misstep in the auction process can result in lost revenue for publishers. A single error in a drag race can cost you the win.
And, you know, Core, there's something thrilling about that. The high stakes push people to innovate and master their craft. It's not unlike nostalgia drag racing, where participants are driven by passion and glory rather than monetary gain. Those folks are literally playing with fire. There's a purity to it that parallels the drive behind fintech companies that push for more efficient, transparent systems.
True, Jack. And while nostalgia drag racing leans on the mastery of vintage cars, fintech uses advanced tech like double-entry ledgers to ensure no penny goes untracked. This unavoidable complexity becomes a beautiful dance of precision, much like the delicate tuning of a nitro car's clutch.
And isn't it ironic? Both these worlds, as different as they seem, require an obsessive level of detail and a deep understanding of the systems at play. Whether you're making sure your financial transactions balance perfectly or that your dragster is primed for the perfect run, it's all about precision.
It is, Jack. And don't get me started on the importance of readability and user experience in these contexts. Just as good interface design can simplify complex digital navigation, a well-organized ledger or race team setup can be the difference between success and failure.
Plus, there's the recent push for more transparent fintech solutions, akin to how nostalgia racing thrives on transparency and authenticity. People want clarity on where their money is going and how systems work, much like how they appreciate seeing the raw mechanics of a vintage dragster.
So true, Jack. And let's not forget the overlap with investments. Just as a drag racer might invest heavily in top-tier components for performance, fintech firms pour resources into building resilient, future-proof systems. It's all about ensuring that every piece, from engines to algorithms, functions flawlessly under pressure.
And speaking of investments, there's also the whole debate around who controls these advanced systems. It's not just about money anymore, but how it's tracked, managed, and transparently reported. Sounds a lot like what Mark Andreessen brought up about debanking, control, and trust in the financial ecosystem.
Absolutely, Jack. Essentially, whether it's controlling financial systems or racing machines, it's about mastery, precision, and trust. Both fields demand high stakes, detailed knowledge, and an unwavering commitment to excellence. It's all about staying ahead of the curve, on the track, or in financial tech.
Core, I couldn't have said it better myself. The parallels are stunning and just go to show, whether it's digital or mechanical engineering, mastering the craft is what distinguishes the winners. Now, if only the interfaces we deal with daily could be as fine-tuned and efficient as a well-oiled dragster.
Here's to hoping, Jack. Maybe one day we'll get there. And in the meantime, it's thrilling to see the innovations, both on the quarter-mile track and in the financial tech world. Cheers to progress.
Cheers, Core. Always a pleasure diving deep into these fascinating worlds with you. Let's see where innovation takes us next.
Absolutely, Jack. Onward and upwards.
Well, that about wraps it up for today's episode. We covered a lot of ground, from the latest AI advancements to the recent political shifts affecting the tech industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who knew we'd end up debating robotic rights and the ethics of AI in one episode? Quite the roller coaster.
And let's not forget our heated discussion on the latest merger in the tech world. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the next few months.
Definitely. Always good to keep an eye on those power players. Plus, thanks for keeping it light with that hilarious take on the AI-created art. I'm never going to look at digital paintings the same way again.
Hey, we all need a good laugh amidst these groundbreaking developments. Speaking of which, thanks to our audience for sticking with us through all the twists and turns.
Yes, a huge thank you to everyone who joined us on AI on Chain today. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some valuable insights.
And remember, if you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and share the podcast with your friends.
Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and always keep questioning.
See you next time, folks.
Take care, everyone.